From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 18th day of November 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jerry Gulkey from the Gulkey Group. He's in Minot, North Dakota today, usually hails from the great city of Rockford, Illinois. Jackie Vakes is out of the office this afternoon. And then a bit later in the program, we'll hear about the weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, Gary Schnitke will be here to talk about his latest article for the Farm Doc Daily website. He talks about the reasons farmers tend to choose RP for crop insurance. And that all comes up right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today up 5.5 cents. It settled at 425.75. The March at 430.5, 3.75 higher. December next year at 409, up 1.5. January beans 6 higher at $11.75. November of next year at 1051.5, 4.25 higher. Bean oil up 96 cents. Bean meal down 90 cents for the day. And soft red winter wheat, July contract a penny higher on the day at 605.25. Live cattle futures 67.5 higher, feeders down 35, and lean hogs were up 27.5 cents. Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group now joins us. Thanks for being with us, Jerry.
Yeah, thank you.
You've written an article for DTN. That's one of your regular gigs, talking about the current marketplace. I'm wondering, in a broader perspective, as you write this week in that article, what you're thinking as it relates to how USDA put forth some numbers back in August that maybe the market should have paid more attention to.
Well, I think we had a number of things, and that was the reversal. Technically, for me, I watch a number of things, and not just breaking trend lines, but whatever. And we had gotten grain prices, as you remember, down low enough to where this early in the marketing year, you know, with a lot of weather ahead of us yet in August and September, why it looked like it was time maybe to accept risk. I look at hedging and non-hedging as passing off risk or accepting risk. And at that point, I thought, this is the best that you're going to offer me going forward. If I even have to store my crop, we're in a world of hurt. We need to, I guess my broker is the last person I call. I need to call an auctioneer. And of course, then we had the reversal. And here came the, we had a technical reversal as well. But here come the problems with, you know, Iowa. And then it was dry, but I think we underestimated how the drought hurt us in Illinois and on my farm in particular, and plus other parts. And one thing led to another, and you know, we were heavily short this market, the specs were, and we all of a sudden they turned around and started buying. And then, as it so often is in a bull market, they say, you know, a bull needs to eat every day. And I wrote about that as well in DTN, said, you know, this has got to keep going. And here we are, you know, 2 months later, 3 months later, and now we are seeing the things in the global marketplace that are fulfilling what the technicals and the price action was telling us. And it was a perfect storm, really, with the wind and the drought and then the forced buying of China. You know, in the phase one, we kept hearing that they were behind and something needed to happen. Time was running out. And sure enough, they came on board. And I wonder sometimes, you know, I heard a long time ago that you know, back in the day, why that Russia and China both had better weather than us. Well, I would say maybe China has good weather, but they probably saw coming the potential that was coming. And well, I got to buy anyway. I might as well buy. And they bought in big amounts. So here we are. And now we've turned the fundamentals around to where the biggest fundamental I look at is that, you know, we've stopped producing more than we can use globally, and it's a global market, not a local market. It's not all about North Dakota and Illinois. So now we run the risk of not being able to produce enough, given the right fundamental of La Niña in South America. And you know, I think if the market's at a point where it sees some rain, but it better rain, and you know, we run out of time, kind of like we did in the United States a few months ago.
So let me ask a question about old crop, and then we'll look forward into the acreage battle, which is happening today in Chicago. On old crop, both corn and soybeans probably mostly sold out, but corn clearly both in storage, at the elevator commercial storage and in the bin. Is there a reason for that? You write in the article that you just told us, at least, that you thought, well, I'll just take that risk on. Now is the risk switched is the question.
Yeah.
And should you make a sale?
Well, I thought so. I haven't sold any. I have some old crop left that I hadn't sold. I had forward contracted some, and I have left a decision to make to put it in commercial storage because I don't store at home anymore because of time constraints. But I'll probably do so. And I'll pay the price this time. You know, I pay a minimum storage. You know, I got to pick up 18 cents between now and sometime in the before March 1st to pay for the storage. But I think now, you know, with the farmers around the country, you know, they've gotten a lot of checks in the mail, and there are some that are worried about paying income tax this year if they sell the grain. And I think we locked it away. And, you know, you folks talked about it on the radio station, and I've mentioned it that, you know, sell the beans, get good cash flow, store the corn. I think that's what farmers are doing. And they're pretty happy with their lot in life right now. I think they're understanding the fundamentals, and they do have money coming in, you know, to try to buy the election or to try to buy their votes or to buy some forgiveness for the tariff problems we had. And so I think the constraints on money aren't as bad as we thought. And farmers are content to wait and see. And given what we know today, what is our downside risk, unless it's all a big lie, and it's not? China has high-priced corn. It works for them to buy low and sell high inside their own country, and that works a while, and we're pretty competitive globally. And probably the biggest things that the WASDE report brought out, that, you know, they finally admitted to the fact that the Ukraine crop wasn't as big as everybody thought, and they lowered it more than I thought. I thought maybe they lowered 4 or 5 million metric tons, but they did 10. That's 400 million bushels. And they tell me that it may even be even worse yet there. And we've got a problem in Argentina and the United States. So farmers are looking at this and they see it. You know, they understand things better now than we did 20 years ago. And I think they're content to wait and see see what you'll pay me next spring. Given the large export book that we have on corn and the how far behind we have been in shipping the physical commodity out of the country, if you're going to meet that goal, and maybe it's even higher, you better get off the stick and start moving some corn out of this country, because it'll take, what, 50, 60 million bushels per week in order to meet the goal by August 31st. You know, when we start a new marketing year. So I think the farmers realize that somebody's going to have to come after this corn. And I think they're content to wait a while and see what happens. And, you know, it's been an easy year in North Dakota. I drove all the way through the state yesterday, and there wasn't a tractor in the field. Of course, it's frozen in some places, but it's 50 degrees today in Minot. The fall tillage is done. It's a complete reversal from when I was here in May, when you couldn't find the same tractor in the field because it was too wet. So I think the farmers are just pretty well content with waiting the year out.
What are you going to do there in North Dakota and in Illinois as it's related to planting decisions? Because in your article you say, now the market's telling you, and you don't often get this choice, what maybe you ought to plant?
For me, in Northern Illinois, I'm looking at this and saying, you want to pay me another 50 cents a bushel more? I might very well plant beans on beans this year, because it works, it's easy, and that compensates me for some reduction in yield that I might receive. In North Dakota, we just sat down this morning and we're talking about it, and canola looks good. You take a look at a canola chart, take a look at a soybean oil chart. The oil demand is in the world is big, edible oils. And it has partially to do, I think, with this biodiesel new blending that they're going to do. I have friends in the oil patch up here and told me 3 months ago that refineries were switching from refining gasoline to refining the new biodiesel blend that California is pushing. And they're saying it's a big deal. I think there's three major refineries, if not more now, that have already switched. And this is before we even thought Biden had a chance of being president, or had a less than 50-50 chance, perhaps. And he's really in favor of the biodiesel and the alternative fuels. And that may be very well for the beans. And the oil guys were very bullish on beans, you know, 3 months ago, and I kind of ignored them. But now they're right. Bean oil especially has gotten a lot of favor. So keep the debate up and the auction, as they call it, up for acres. And it'll be interesting come spring, especially if we get any kind of adverse weather.
Hey, Jerry, thank you. We appreciate it.
You bet.
That's Jerry Gahlke. He is with the Gahlke Group. Hey, have you signed up yet for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits? I hope so. You know, usually the agricultural economist and I make our way around the state in 5 days, five different cities. This time around, we'll do 5 different days, but just 1 hour a day, and it'll all be virtual, starting December the 1st. That's a Tuesday, and then running Tuesday, Friday, and Tuesday for 5 days in a row, ending the 15th of December. Just 1 hour at 11 o'clock on each of those days. Again, Tuesday, Friday, Tuesday, Friday, Tuesday. Your chance right now to get signed up for the Farm Economic Summits. It's a great way to catch up with what the agricultural economists here on the Urbana-Champaign campus have been thinking about the last crop year and what next year might look like. You can sign up at the Farm Doc Daily website right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Again, that's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now, up next, I caught up with one of those ag economists, Gary Schnitke, yesterday afternoon to discuss his latest penning for the Farm Doc Daily website. It's an article about crop insurance and RP. I asked him about it.
Yeah, so we wrote today about crop insurance use over time, and we looked at data from 1989 to the present and examined what farmers have been doing in Illinois, and Illinois farmers are doing much the same, or nationwide as well. What we saw is the following. Crop insurance is extensively used. It's used on over 85% of the acres for corn and soybeans in Illinois. That which is planted is insured. And the single most popular crop insurance product is RP, and it's used to insure over 90% of the acres in both corn, soybeans, and wheat in Illinois. So over time, farmers have migrated to RP, and there's really no reason to expect them not to continue with RP. What they like about RP is probably two things: the guarantee price increase associated with RP, and they prefer farm level coverage to any sort of county level products. So we'll see if they want to buy add-on products to RP, and that will be seen this year.
Should farmers prefer the farmland as opposed to the county-level products?
That's a good decision. RP is a very good product. It provides excellent protection, and migrating to that makes perfect sense.
If you'd like, you can read more about the decision to use RP in crop insurance on the Farm Doc Daily website right now, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And while you're there, why don't you sign up for those Illinois Farm Economic Summits? Again, they're Tuesday, Friday, starting December the 1st and running through the 15th, just 1 hour each of those days at 11 a.m. Central Time. Well, it's a Wednesday afternoon. That means Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the weather forecast. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's a blustery day here in the Kansas City area. I hope you're holding on to your hat over there. I think it's kind of windy there, too, isn't it?
Well, you know, it wasn't this morning, and I've been so busy, I frankly have not been out to see. And I haven't heard the wind, so I'm not sure whether it is or not. we'll see. I bet it will be. It's supposed to be, so I'll probably have something to pick up outside eventually. I can't imagine that.
I think that's right. This is a pretty broad area. It extends from Kansas and Oklahoma clear to Michigan, so I think it's probably breezy outside there.
I bet it is. We'll come back to the breezy in just a second, but let's start in South America because they had kind of a rough start to their growing season across the board from one end of the continent to the other. Do you want to start in Argentina and work your way northward, please?
Sure. You know, we had a generalized light rain event last weekend across Argentina that helped to boost the topsoil moisture in a quite favorable manner. It was probably the best coverage event we've seen in Argentina in several weeks. Unfortunately, the amounts of rain were still fairly light in quite a few areas. There were some locations in the northwest and west central parts of crop country that did get 1 to 2 inches of rain, and that was really nice. Some of the other areas, a little bit more erratic light rainfall, but the soil moisture profile has at least temporarily improved in the topsoil, and that's what they really need right now to plant that soybean crop and the late corn as well as sorghum. So they got a little bit of a boost this week, but it is now back into the dry mode, and it will stay dry there through the weekend. The first opportunity for rain in Argentina now is going to occur Monday through Wednesday. It'll be another event like this past weekend. I think the amounts will probably be a quarter to three quarters of an inch. It might be a couple of pockets to get 1 to 1.5 inches, but it's still going to be a little bit of a disappointing event. And then we go several days after that dry again. So Argentina will continue limping along. That's really the best way we can describe it. But they are at least getting some moisture that they can plant with and that they get a little bit of germination. The future is still very questionable, though, as to how well they will see those yields end up being.
And as you go northward, what do you find in Brazil?
Brazil is getting a very important rain event right now. You know, Paraná is one of their more important grain and oilseed producing states, and it's been really quite dry in the more concentrated crop area in the west and north part of that state. And neighboring areas in southern Paraguay, as well as extreme southern parts of Mato Grosso do Sul, have also been a little dry biased. Now, last night, we did see some 1-inch plus amounts of rain occur across a part of this region. So that was really very welcome. And we're going to see the rain continue into the night tonight and then diminish tomorrow. So this is their kind of a last ditch effort here for them to get meaningful moisture, because the next 7 to 8 days are going to be dry there. We also have dryness in Bolivia. Not that we pay a lot of attention to them. They produce a little bit of beans, though, and some corn. In neighboring areas in southwestern Mato Grosso and northwestern Mato Grosso do Sul, all that area there is quite dry. Now, they are going to get missed by all of the rain coming up over the next 10 days, and they're going to be quite dry by the end of that period of time. In the meantime, the powerhouse Mato Grosso, the state that everybody watches so closely for those early beans and then the safrinha corn, the state isn't doing very well with rainfall. And we are going to see an opportunity here late today into tomorrow where we've got a chance for some 3/4 inch to 2 inch amounts of rain. And if they miss it, they're going to be without rain too for about a week. So it's going to be a very important event. I think it will probably verify. So we'll see some improvement there. But again, a close watch on Brazil is still going to be needed for the next few weeks, because we do have these pockets that are still a little too dry. The rest of the country, though, is doing okay, and I think it will do okay as we move forward. It's really going to be mostly the southern part of that country that's going to continue struggling with erratic and often lighter than usual rainfall.
In the United States, I think we probably should turn our attention to wheat dormancy in the Great Plains, and of course in this soft red winter wheat growing regions of the Midwest. Cold weather, whether that's going into dormancy, snow cover will be needed, and of course that does have an impact on livestock in some of those northwestern areas of the U.S. as well. Can you tell me what you've been watching?
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, you mentioned the Pacific Northwest. Their wheat crop up there struggled for a long time on dryness. They went through a period this past week where multiple little waves of rain went through the region, some mountain snows nearby, and that was really helpful. But the temperatures dropped, and now we're too cool for wheat development in that area. So dormancy is at least temporarily an issue in the Pacific Northwest. But bringing it back down into hard red winter wheat country, we're also cooling down in Nebraska and northwest Kansas and eastern Colorado. And these areas are going to warm up over these next few days, maybe be able to still stimulate a little bit of root development and some tillering. But I'm afraid that area is just going to continue bouncing around a little bit too much on the cool side to really stimulate some good establishment. And of course, they're quite dry today. Now, this weekend, we've got an opportunity for rain and a little bit of snow in that Nebraska, West Kansas, and East Colorado area. The moisture, every bit of it will be welcome. We will get enough enough above freezing periodically that the moisture will get into the soil and help those roots down the road. But we are not going to see a prolonged period of warm weather in that area to really stimulate the best establishment. So we're still a little concerned about that area. Farther to the east and south, certainly the temperatures are warm enough to support ongoing wheat development, but we are drying down a little bit. The rain event coming up this weekend will be quite beneficial, though, for central Kansas southward into Oklahoma. So those areas will probably end up doing well. And farther to the east in the Midwest, we're going to see a warming trend take place so that we can raise those soil temperatures back up in soft wheat areas. That should translate into a little better establishment potential. I don't see any prolonged cold weather coming up for any of these wheat producing areas as we move forward through the next 10 days. So we should be able to get a little better establishment.
Stay in the Northern Hemisphere. Check in on some of the other wheat-growing regions for me.
All right. China is the top of my list today because they got a very significant rain event last night. We saw widespread moisture across some of their key production areas in the North China Plain and Yellow River Basin area. They irrigate quite a bit of that crop. They don't irrigate all of it. And this was a very timely rain event that should have helped that dry land crop tremendously. All of the crop is planted and it's not dormant yet. So this was really a perfectly timed event to help ensure that they've got a good established crop. Now, rapeseed areas in China are probably going to get rain too. They got some last night. They're going to get a lot more and probably turn a little bit too wet. But I don't see it as being a huge issue. Again, most of their planting season should be over or winding down right now, and this moisture will help to ensure that crop is favorably established before dormancy sets in. Back in Russia, you know, we've talked in past weeks about the situation with dryness in Russia's southern region and also neighboring areas of Ukraine. Both those areas have seen a little bit of moisture. In fact, we've got a snowstorm that's winding down right now on parts of Russia's southern region. They picked up upwards to a foot of snow in a small region just to the east of the Ukraine border. And that was a very important crop area also that received some moisture. Unfortunately for them, it's very cool also. So again, there's not going to be any improvement in the vegetative establishment there for that crop. But again, the roots might actually be able to stimulate themselves into a little bit more development before the really coldest part of winter arrives. And that'll translate into a better development potential in the spring. But those crops there in Ukraine and Russia's southern region will still be vulnerable to winter kill this year. And it's going to be very, very important that they keep snow on the ground during those colder days.
For those of you listening, rapeseed is just another term for canola. Canola, in fact, was originally a trademark name put forth by the Rapeseed Association of Canada. And the name is just a combination of can for Canada and ola, which means oil, low, acid. But it's now a generic term for all kinds of edible varieties of rapeseed oil in North America. Hey, thank you for being with us today, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.